Welcome back to Tasteland. I am your co-host, Francis Zier.
And I'm Daisy Aliotto.
And today we will be talking with Jeremy Kirkland, the host of Blammo, podcast veteran at this point. It's been around for 9 years. Real style guy. His podcast hosts interviews with a real murderer's row of fashion world people. Yeah, I'm excited to talk to him.
He's also a watch guy, which is perfect.
He's a
for
big
me.
Watch guy. Yeah. This is going to be, there's going to be watch talk. We should find out if he's a perfume guy. Who knows? Fragrance
100%
head.
100%. We should find out.
Jeremy Fragrance.
Oh my gosh. That's a deep cut.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of fragrance, I did have a tweet about my exterminator go viral. I was a little, all the comments were very nice, and I will tell you what the tweet was, but one of them
why do you say speaking of fragrance? Is because exterminators spray poisonous gas?
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. Okay. You understand my mind at this point on a deep
level. I'm a little tired today, okay?
Well, pace yourself because we're recording two podcast episodes today.
They don't need to know that.
Well, now they know.
No, they know.
Anyway, they were like, how often do you need an exterminator? And I was like, my landlord sends him once a month regardless. Like, I think that's like a New York thing.
Not for me. Maybe in my building.
Yeah.
We had in New Orleans. New Orleans was another matter.
Yeah. Well, we have construction going on next door. So he sort of impressed upon me the importance of like sometimes letting this guy in. Because I think when you have construction, it like drives the critters out of that plot. And sometimes they just run into the next building over is my layman's understanding. But actually, so the tweet was about how I told my exterminator when I let him in last week, hey, a couple months ago, they sent another guy and I knew it wasn't you.
This is canon. I forget if this was on, if you talked about this on the mic, but you definitely talked to me about this at length.
I did
on and off the mic.
It.
Maybe off the mic. I don't know.
Well, it was upsetting. This wasn't in the tweet. So this is backstory that wasn't in the tweet. And I was like, should I add this later? But I was like, no, I'll just leave it as like a nice story.
It's for the listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. Friends of the pod. So I could tell from his knock that it wasn't my normal guy. And with my normal guy, sometimes he knocks, and if I've just gone out of the shower, if I'm in the middle of like writing or something, I just don't answer and he leaves.
Yeah.
This other person, I hear like an aggressive knock. And I was like,
instead of a doot doodaloo doo, it's like bang.
Yeah,
bang.
Yeah. So like my regular guy, he does like a soft knock or like shaven haircut.
That's what it is.
So aggressive knock, but it's a Thursday. It's the first Thursday of the month. So I know it's the exterminator, and I'm like, I literally was naked in my room. So I was like, he'll just go away. Well,
he doesn't know that.
Then I hear my door open.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like,
this is it. Yeah,
okay, this guy's in my apartment. It's not my normal guy. Furthermore, my normal guy would not let himself into my apartment. Like, I have my perception of who my exterminator is, and he's a soft knocker who's not going to let himself into my apartment. So I just scream like, get the fuck out. I don't even like see him. I never see him at any point. But I know it's not my guy. So he leaves and then he like comes back. I hear him come back and I still haven't left. I still haven't left my room. I'm in like fight or flight and I'm like, get the fuck out. So I text my landlord and I'm like, exterminator let himself in. Furthermore, don't think it was the usual guy. Like, who did you send? This guy's knock was all wrong. Like, just like going full Sicilia, and Ben's like, this is unacceptable.
You are
and
wearing
then,
the Italia shirt today.
Now we have like a, now we have a bar that goes under our knob, but I hadn't seen my regular exterminator since. I think I was maybe in Maine like last time he came. So I let him in last week and I'm like, hey, he does shave and a haircut softly. I let him in. I'm like, hey, they sent another guy a couple months ago. Was it you? Right. And he was like, he let himself in. He was like, what? No, I would never do that. And I was like, and his knock was so aggressive. And he was like, no, I always make my knock a little song. So,
so anyways, this tweet has how many likes?
Oh, I actually hadn't checked. Do you have it?
How viral did you go?
How viral? I mean, it's crazy because my tweets get like 5 likes now, but I just use it as my diary. So I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Let's see.
I'm just gonna say it. I'm bad at Twitter.
I don't even know like what that means anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did blow the lid off of the whole Wayfair furniture situation. It got like 10 likes, and I was like, okay, well, like I have insight. Well, you know how people are like, oh, they're shipping children in the Wayfairs because they're people's names. My brother worked at Wayfair at the time, and they just randomized their employees' names. So if you plug Aliotto into Wayfair, like multiple pieces of furniture come up. So somebody brings that up again. And I was like, yeah, this is what was going on. And like, nobody even noticed. And I was like, well, I'm telling you. Okay. So Exterminator tweet, 15,000 likes, 389 retweets, 314 bookmarks.
Well, Daisy, don't spend it all in one place, but do put it in your savings because Jeremy is here.
All right, let's go. We have a joke that like all podcasts are really restaurant podcasts, because I think most of the time those strong opinions loosely held are about restaurants, but maybe that's just because I listen to How Long Gone primarily.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like you just listen to Chris and Jason.
I've been trying to divest from restaurant opinionship, from having an opinion on restaurants in general. I mean, I've talked about this before on the pod, but I did use Resy last night to book a place for Friday. But I'm happy to say it was the type of place that's been open long enough. Every slot was open.
Beautiful.
Full choices.
Love to see it.
It used to be if I was, setting 10 notifications, I've got a lot of vices, but Resy is no longer really one of them.
Are you going to name the restaurant? You want to wait till you actually eat there?
I'm just going to say it's in the Greenpoint Williamsburg area.
Oh, that's about 6,000 restaurants. Good call.
Yeah. Well, this comes out tomorrow. I'm eating there on Friday. I don't need our rabid fans to...
right. Yeah.
Excuse me. I don't know if I should come to your table or maybe just send something over.
Send a martini.
Yeah.
Three olives.
Wow. I will say that's the best part of living in the suburbs now is I don't have to deal with...
You're free.
With any of the sort of like weird restaurant stuff.
Whereabouts are you?
I'm in St. Louis, Missouri, which is...
Dang. Which
are you went to college there, but you're not from there, right?
No, I am from St. Louis.
Okay, you're from there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I lived in New York and then left New York at like end of 2020. Mm-hmm. And
classic time to do so.
Yeah. Well, things were a little
yeah,
nuts.
Why?
And now I commute to New York like once a month or so. Which
once a month.
Yeah, it's a little intense.
By plane.
Oh yeah. It's a short flight. It's I take it's usually a 7 a.m. flight, and I'm like, grabbing a coffee at like 9:30, 10 a.m.
Well, is this to record pods, to work with clients, to hang out, all the above?
It's usually like pod and client stuff. I'm one of those people though, like I have a podcast, but it's been going on for so long that now like the overhead is sky high, and I also make other shows for other people. And so it's like this hamster wheel that I will forever keep turning, but I make a living working with like brands and doing events and other stuff. So
you spoke about this. I listened to an interview you did with, I think Garbology, I think it's called, a year ago. I might have the name wrong. British guy.
Yeah.
You were talking about this, how the podcast basically just pays for itself and is almost like top of funnel for your consulting work.
It is. And it's like
a validator.
Yeah. I used to be really pissed about that. And I remember complaining about it to another friend of mine who was like, get over it. I was like, fair response. He was just like, dude, who cares? He's like, you're working. You're going to be fine. Let it go. And I was like, okay. But I think anyone who's especially in this like tiny miniature sort of menswear, fashion, hot take, whatever people want to call it world, is constantly looking.
You can just name
shoulder.
Them Jim and Larry.
No, Lawrence and those guys. I mean, Lawrence and James are like some of my best buds. Lawrence, weirdly, I've known for like 17 years now. He's one of my best friends. But it's funny, Lawrence is a very good barometer for podcasting because he does not, for me, every single episode I do anything, I'm like, okay, like I agonized over this edit, over this, like, did we shape this conversation correctly? Was this person framed right? Did I serve them well? A lot of times, like the people that I get to have on the show are just people that I like. So, that's why you never really hear me like, getting into arguments or stuff with anyone.
Hospitality is a big part of being an interview, especially when you're like a solo interviewer, I think.
Yeah. And it's like, I want people to feel comfortable. You know, I want people to enjoy themselves. And I also want to have something that is going to be relevant to what we're talking about versus, oh, you work with X brand and you're going to do the same like pitch that you do on everything. Like, there's no point in doing that with
me. Let's not do press releases.
Yeah. It's like, that's so lame. And so, I remember like getting pissed off over stuff and I was like venting to Larry and he was like, dude, just record another one. He's like, just do another podcast. And I was like, oh, he's like, you could then if that doesn't work, just do another episode.
It's just like, nobody's going to remember this episode.
Just like, it doesn't matter. And you know, and not, then it wasn't like a shot at me. It was just like, just keep going. And it's funny because I think people, no one gives Lawrence enough credit for how fucking brilliant he is. In terms of his like pop culture knowledge, and he can talk in any lane. He's an expert in like 99% of the stuff that, you know, everyone's talking about, but he sits back and puts on this kind of, you know, goofball character. And it's crazy. I mean, his knowledge of like sports analytics is fucking encyclopedic. I have no idea. Like, we're talking about baseball and he knows about like David Wright's contracts and all these other things. I'm like, what?
So is this strong opinions loosely held or just strong opinions strongly held?
It's facts that he's got stuck in his brain.
Strong to statistics, strongly remembered.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just like, whoa.
That's really hard. I'm not so good at remembering all those statistics, honestly.
Who is?
That's why I'm better in the interviewer's seat when I have my notes.
Is his relationship towards throwing fits as a top of funnel, or is it a different relationship? And have you been able to sort of like learn from that? Through proximity to him,
Lawrence and James, this isn't like mean or been anything at all. I mean, it's funny. I preface it with this, but like, like Larry is this like comic relief goofball guy who is basically like, will dive deep into certain subjects. And James is kind of like the showrunner in the sense that like, okay, yeah, like you can see James editing their pod in real time in terms of like pushing a person to another subject. So I think they very much know
the one who has the notes in front of him. I can always tell like, when I've listened.
Yeah, they very much know like their lane. And I think whether they discuss it publicly or not is separate from the fact that like they're just like they're lockstep with each other. I mean, they razz each other so much that their listeners even get pissed off about it. But those guys were like really fucking on lock. And I think they're probably some of the smartest dudes in terms of business. I mean,
I will say they
crush it.
Reading, discovering a friend sending me 4 pins in 2013 when I was a sophomore in college is responsible for me spending many thousands of dollars on our legacy over the last
on pants
more than a decade.
Pants,
shoes, shirts. I could full outfit.
Bigger question.
I'm not actually wearing any right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you wear it now or do you still own it? Because that's the thing.
No, I do. Right now, I mean, it's just hot. So I'm wearing just a linen shirt and some shorts that I'm just in my work from home. You know, look, the shirt will look nice on the one social clip we cut here.
Sure.
I still buy it. Though, predictably, I'll let you guess which brand I've gotten into more over the past year.
Apprese?
No.
Oh fuck.
It's also Scandi.
Scandi. That's too many brands. All of the brands are Scandi.
It's MF Pen.
Oh, MF Pen. Never would have guessed that.
Really? After our legacy?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess that's the logical step into like, I want better taste. I want more refinement. Yeah. I want less people to know who this brand is.
Sounds like you're a stereotype, Francis.
I am, happily. And it's also much better priced. No.
I too am a stereotype because I'm wearing an LA Apparel tennis skirt, an Italy jersey, a Hodinkee swatch, and UGG slippers.
That's pretty. It's cool seeing people wear the wearing like soccer football jerseys.
You're like, it's cool seeing people brave enough to look like shit in their own home.
Whoa. You're talking to a guy who's wearing a beat up Motorola gym shirt.
Yeah, and it's cool.
Then I was like, oh yeah, cool. Don't worry. They're not going to record video. They're not going to use video on this thing. So we rip video.
Got your ass.
Oh, okay.
This actually would be a perfect video to cut. Just this clip. This is the clip.
Yeah.
There you go.
Anyways. Okay. Wait. Anyways, I want to bring it back around to, we got off track on talking about the business of Blam. No, don't do not apologize.
Talking about
the business of Blammo. I looked at the Patreon, just under 3,000 members right now, brings in $7,643 a month. But I believe this also funds not just Blammo, but the JJJ show. And then you also work with Derek Guy and Peter Zatolo under Blammo. So Blammo is a network that's these three podcasts, right?
Correct. Yeah. And that is, I don't know. I think initially that was not the plan, but in my head I was like, oh, I know how to do this. I'm going to reach out to all these people and have them do their pods. So like at one point during the pandemic, Mordecai was going to do a pod.
Yeah.
And we got Mordecai Rubenstein, Mr. Mort. Yeah. And we got like five or six episodes in the can. There is actually one with him and Andy Spade. Whoa. And it's great. I mean, I have it, and you know, but I think
this is like that Wu-Tang album, that
Blu-ray extra.
Yeah. The producing a pod, making a pod, all these things, they're like different, I don't know, different parts of your brain. And I think Mordecai, genius host. And I was like, you know, let's keep going. And he was like, I don't know. Like, this is just kind of fun. Like, you know, how many do we actually need to do? And I was like, oh, okay, that's not going to happen. You know, then at another point, there was another person I was talking to, and there was like, let's make a show. And in my head, I was like, look, I have all these tools. I fully believe the table is infinite. I'm not competing with anyone. I don't think anyone's competing with me. Like, let's just get more good stuff out there. And in my head, I was like, look, a rising tide's going to lift all ships here. And a couple other people, we tried to do some stuff, didn't work out. Then at one point we were talking with Condé Nast about doing this show. It doesn't matter now because, you know, but it was called Cover Story. And the whole point of it was like, okay, we're not going to do like a chat podcast. We're going to do more of like this kind of like NPR-y sort of like expose. And like, we're going to do
scripted.
Yeah. We're going to do like basically behind the scenes of specific magazine covers. So like what went into the, you know, Britney Spears Teletubbies cover and like, how did that affect, you know, pop culture at the time? Like, who shot it? What did that look like? What was those, you know, and what did that mean for sexualizing women and all these other things? And I was like, this is
American
gonna be
Life magazine.
Yeah. And
sounds like a home run. Yeah.
Well, and then Condé Nast was like, that sounds awesome. How about we do it? You know, ooh, we got a tight budget. I bet we can do maybe $1,500 an episode. And I was like, there's like 12 people that need to work on it. And they were like, oh, we thought you were just going to talk about a magazine cover. And I was like, what? And so I realized how painfully difficult it is to do network. I'm kind of air quoting there. And then I had people from NPR that reached out to me, people from Pineapple Street, RIP, that reached out to me, and they were like, hey, like, you can do this. Let us help. You know, we can work together. Maybe we partner up. We do like a co-branded show thing. And then I realized I was spending all my time just on the like business of trying to just make a fucking show instead of making the show. And I was like, this sucks. And so meanwhile, Derek Guy, whom I've known for eons, is a very, very good friend.
The mentor.
Did you meet on Twitter? How did you meet?
We met, I think, this was pre-Twitter. This would have been, I mean, he probably had a Twitter at that time, but he was doing Dye Workwear. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I was doing, I think I might have been doing my blog at the time, but like I was still working at Beggars. Okay. So it would have been 2010, 11 or so. And we just stayed in touch. And I was like, dude, you need to do a podcast. You should do a podcast. And he was like, yeah, I don't want to deal with all this crap. But he was like, Derek is basically relentless and just works nonstop. And so I was like, well, here, let's do this. I was like, I'll like hold your hand. I was like, I will be your co-host. I'll do, you know, long story short, a few years later, he's finally like, okay, let's do it. We start doing it. And I think it was just me and him. And then it was just Derek. And he was like, yeah, no, I need another person. And Peter Zatolo, who's a good friend and a good friend of his. And, you know, I mean, Derek really values his privacy, which I completely respect. And so Peter and Derek are super close. They start doing it together. And that kind of like popped off around the same time as his Twitter stuff. But it's interesting because like there was an effect that happened with like the sort of like Patreon itself. Because for me, it's like the Patreon is not the core goal. It's not even our core listenership, but it's, you know, basically just like, you know, more nerdy fans per se. Yeah. And there's a little Slack community and everyone's talking about, I don't know, like where to eat in Florence or whether some brand's cooked or if some watch is cool. And
who's not chopped.
Yeah. And what's crazy is like, it's an extremely positive vibe.
Yeah.
Community where there's like a homesteading one where people are talking about like home reno and stuff, but then there's a parenting one. Okay. And that, like, you have, you know, different parents being like, hey, this happened with my kid, or what do I do with here? And it's like, it's super wholesome. It's, yeah. And I don't say it to like advertise. I say it in the sense that like, it's strange because like things like this don't really exist on the internet. Yeah. And so I was like, well, I don't want to like try to like monetize this so much, but also at the same time, you're like, I got to pay daycare bills and health insurance. I was like, so I'm not really exactly sure how we do this, but that's kind of been I think that's the stickiness of any of the stuff. So like people will come in and like, great, it's another interview, or it's me doing a solo pod, or it's me and Gian and Jeff or somebody or whatever. But like, I think the thing that sticks people is the Slack. But Derek comes in and it's a completely different type of audience, a very transactional audience, because his audience is so big. And so,
because they like want him to like, you know, rip them a new one or like tell them how they should wear a suit or something. What do you mean by that?
I think if you are in this, like, this sounds pejorative, like the creative economy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what a tacky fucking phrase. But like, if you're in this thing where people are essentially paying you for your opinion or for something that they think they could easily do themselves, like talking, writing, which I think is, you know, that's a whole other conversation.
Dunning-Kruger effect in action.
Yeah, there is this like, you sort of owe me, I pay your bill mentality. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's funny because I'll read the exit interviews or the exit notes of Patreon, and they're crazy. And it's like, I messaged Derek and he didn't respond to me. So I, you know, for that reason, I'm out. And you're like, whoa. Okay.
This sounds like some kind of weird OnlyFans.
At least of some of these folks that came in wanting this like deeper relationship with Derek. And so the audience that's in there, like these like more core people that are just like Blammo folks, they're like, you know, someone's in there and they're like, hey, rate my fit. And people are like, yeah, you look great. And they're like, well, don't you want to like nitpick it more? And they're like, no, are you happy? You're good. And it's like, you see these two roads diverge in a wood. And it's just like, whoa, dude.
Well, this is like, I feel like this kind of fit pick culture, like I'll still see this on like, what's his name? Mark Boutelier.
Yeah.
I'll say his last name. Or there's some other, I don't know if the Throwing Fits guys still do this, but they'll do like Fit Pick Friday or something on Instagram. And all these people tend to be a little younger. You said something I wrote down on that Garmology pod. That I'll read here. That's the problem and opportunity of the internet. A lot of times people are just trying to find a way to be comfortable with themselves by sharing. And you say, I realize it's probably incorrect, but people try and be comfortable with themselves by sharing a picture publicly. If the criticism is fair and you're inviting that criticism, then you should entertain it. But if you don't want it, don't share it. Which the way you're describing this and how like this Blammo culture is more just like, wear what you want. It's like, it sounds like it's people who like kind of have figured it out and are less worried about this like competitive like dress up
validation.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's crazy that I said that, man. I must have been on one that day. That sounds kind of dope. I'm, you know, way to go me at that time. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of this stuff where, you know, cause people put me and Lawrence like together or where it's like, oh, and it's just a totally different fucking show to where it's like, I don't ever care what anyone wears. I will make jokes about everything I wear. I will make jokes about my opinion and how I used to like this brand and now I don't, right? You know, but like, I don't care what you wear. I want people to be happy and I want people to know that they can be involved in this world and community if they want. Like, that's it. And I think that sounds a little too Mr. Rogers for people because people almost want this, you know, anonymity of the internet to be this like cloak and dagger situation where you just talk shit and you make jokes at other people's expense. And like, that's fine. But like, dude, that was fucking high school. And like, that was so long ago. Yeah. Who cares about that now? Like, you know, everyone here is like trying to make a living. They're trying to figure stuff out. And I am like almost stuck in this thing because if I, you know, like I don't have anything else to go on. Like I don't have a bunch of money. I don't have some sort of family name. I don't have some sort of like prestigious education at some place. I can't go work at Wall Street or whatever. So like, this is it. So like, if I fuck up my reputation or any of that stuff, like it's over for me.
Taste is your 401k.
Like a good guy.
Yeah. So it's like, just be a nice person, I guess. But people are like, that's fucking lame. Who's does that? And you're just like, okay, sure. So I'm just like, you know, I'll just kind of, you know, second star on the right straight on until morning and just like get to Neverland, you know, just kind of like keep, you know, move in that direction. And I recognize for some people, you know, it's funny because I'll read stuff on Reddit about me. It fucking sucks.
Oh, no.
Don't do that. Because I am, too, am like any normal person who, like, when you talk mad shit, like, oh, it also hurts. You know, where it's like, oh, Kirkland's corny as fuck. He's so, and I'm just like, man, fuck you. You know, I'm like, well, you, whatever. Your username is like Pepsi Can 04. Like, what?
It's like, okay. Yeah. I mean, with what you're saying about exit notes, so I'll have people respond to the newsletter being like, unsubscribe. Oh, and sometimes I know them and I'm like, are you stupid? Who do you think this goes to? This is a startup. It goes to my personal email address.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, you, like, we have each other's phone number. And
oh, boy.
It's also like, everyone knows the unsubscribe link is in the bottom, it's not hidden.
Blows my mind that people can't find that.
Like, you're going to be a boomer. And also, like, you've now emailed me.
Did you? So wait, how did you respond when they wrote unsubscribe? Were you like,
usually,
hey, do you have
respond.
Feedback? Oh, okay.
Usually smart. I don't respond, but somebody did it to me yesterday that I didn't know, but could easily Google and was like, this person like has 1 degree of separation from me. I just wrote back and I was like, no problem. I'll get right on that for you.
Hey, okay. So they didn't hear your sort of cynicism. You know,
no,
they
that
couldn't,
was a kindly
they couldn't
worded
discern
customer
the tone.
Service email.
Yeah. No prob. Yeah.
But like, how are you not embarrassed? Unsubscribing is fine. Fair play. But like, in 2025, you think that's done by responding with the word unsubscribe?
My one question is, because I've wondered this too, because I get it with Creative Spotlight.
Yeah.
I think that, is that what happens when you click the unsubscribe button that Gmail gives you at the top of it? Is that how that, like, and it just
no,
sends the word unsubscribe?
No.
What does that do?
No.
I should know that.
I have no idea how that black magic works, but I'm just saying, like, it's in the footer of the email. Everyone knows that. Like,
yeah, that's the tough part where it's like, eventually, you know, because I'm like that too, where it's like, I want everyone's opinion. Yeah. But if your opinion is like really mean, like I don't want it. And you're like, well, you can't really have both, you know? And it's like, okay, so how can I, you know, so I've reached out to people where people have been like, this sucked, or Kirkland said this and that. And you're like, okay. And I've been like, hey, what sort of feedback do you have? But then I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
they
maybe
don't have
I,
feedback. They just want attention.
Yeah. And like, maybe I shouldn't seek everyone's feedback on some of these things and some of the stuff. And this is where a friend of mine told me, he's like, yeah, sometimes like if you think you're doing the right thing, it's okay to keep going and like believe in yourself, you know, or be like, you know what, actually, I think I'm right. So I'm going to keep doing this. And that's a weird thing that I've been trying to do over the past couple of years. And I think, I don't know, parenting has helped a bunch because I'm like, no, I'm sorry. You can't like, you know, stay in the bath or like move your bed to the bathtub. What the fuck is that? Mm-hmm. No, I'm right on this one. We're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay,
gentle
I'm get
parenting
a little more
your audience.
Yeah, gentle. Yeah. Wow. There you go. There's your episode title.
That's a good one.
I mean, I don't mind. You're I don't take it personally. Like, it is business, but people. Yeah. It's also a very parasocial business. So yeah. I think it's good because I think. I don't know if you have this relationship with people in your life. Like if you have these friendships with people in the menswear sphere who have been creating their own things, whether it's a blog or a podcast or magazine articles for a long time. So I'm sure they're like a nerd to this too, but I feel like I've been able to help other people in my life be less sensitive by simply like modeling that, like, if you're doing enough stuff and you're always launching stuff,
yeah,
you don't really have time to like dwell on that self-consciousness. And I would do the same thing you did, which is like, I'm very into the idea of having a network. Like, if you're already doing one thing, it's really not that much more work to do three. And other people are like, why? Like, why are you always launching new newsletters? And I'm like, it's exciting. And it's also not that much more work than what I'm already doing. But it makes a whole that is greater than the sum of its parts, in my opinion. I just love that structure. Just like I always loved the Condé Nast structure. There's something really cool about having multiple things under one umbrella. But if you're doing that, I think it also like distributes some of that feedback just across.
Because you don't have time to dwell.
Yeah. And it's like a bigger surface area for you to be like, okay, well, I don't know why you unsubscribed, but I'm too busy to care. And I've really tried to like teach other people that mentality. Like, hey, even if you're not as busy as me, like we were talking about this with Cora Lewis, who just had her first book come out. It's this novella called Information Age, which I think you would really like because it's infused with some of this being a journalist online experience. But I was like, if you're not embarrassed, like kind of constantly, like you're not putting yourself out there enough. Like I do some stuff that's embarrassing, like so often that it doesn't feel embarrassing anymore just by nature of like how much you have to expand yourself. just like all sorts of things. Like in this particular case, it was like a typo that I didn't notice for 3 days. I left like a watermark in a graphic the other day. I'm always
that like, you consider that embarrassing. Well, I guess you don't consider it embarrassing.
Well,
but
it's
at
a
one
mistake,
point you did.
Right? It's like, ooh, you know. I also like have to cold DM people on LinkedIn a lot. Like, well, I don't have to, but I do. And then you have to follow up when they didn't respond, and then you have to wonder why they didn't respond. And is this girl crazy? Why is she always texting me or like messaging me, asking me to get on a call, jump on a call, buy some ads? It's like, well, the alternative is. Don't have a business.
Is this thing not existing?
Yeah.
That's heavy truth.
Do you ever feel embarrassed?
Yeah, I fucking hate everything I do. I do. I mean, it's why I'm in counseling and therapy. Like I have insane, horrendous body image issues. Everything I've ever made, I'm like, I don't know. Like that's not good enough. Or could I make it better? Like I'm the person if I didn't have like other friends or like, you know, people that I really trusted on feedback, I don't think I would make anything because I would be too focused on trying to make it just good enough. Like, you know, just a little bit better that I could show it to the world, you know? And I think that, I don't know, whatever is people talk like, what is the enemy? The perfection's the enemy of progress or something.
Yeah.
And so I think making, just like putting it out there, it's like, okay, fine, you can do another one. And it also, when you realize that most people that are consuming any of your stuff on the internet, like, don't care as much as you do. And
they're
going to
forget they saw it instantly.
Yeah, it's not to make you feel bad. It's because look at how you consume stuff on the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I work with a few different brands on like advertising and, you know, they're like, hey, we made this 2 minute reel story of explaining about how we do this and this and this. And I'm like, cool, we have about 1.5 seconds. To get someone's attention on the ad, which really sucks, right? Like that's really depressing. So how do you do that? And what is, you know, because like no one really cares that much because also the world is on fire. We're in some very tough political turmoil. You know, I'm not even trying to get political, but it's just like, it's not fucking true. Great for people out there.
Right.
And so we have to remember that some people like, they're just trying to get by.
Everyone else is also too self-obsessed to put this much thought into what you're doing and to think for a day about how it's stupid. Only you are into yourself enough to think that.
We're tailoring pants at the end of the world, basically.
Well, and it's like, so just keep going. But I do recognize in that thing, it's like, okay, like sure, there was a watermark in there. Okay, maybe next time. Or you can fix it in post, right? Like, but did you write it? Did you care? There you go. That's as long as you care about what you're doing. You know,
my friend the other day was like, Daisy, somebody she works with, she was like, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but my friend that I work with, she was like, I love dirt, but they send too many emails. And I was like, okay, like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's That's valid.
That's fair feedback. Sure.
My problem is I'm so concerned that people aren't going to feel like they're getting their money's worth that I never feel like I'm doing enough.
There it is.
But then the feedback is I do not even have time to open all of the emails that you send. And it's so like the experience of being the creator and the experience of being the consumer can be so far apart depending on what people are looking for. And I mean, that's not the type of feedback that hurts my feelings. That's sort of like, okay, well, if I sent fewer emails, that would be like a longer strategic like conversation with myself, basically.
Well, this is just about whether an audience was it completionist or completist? What was the terminology?
Oh yeah. We had this ongoing riff last summer about the difference between completionists and completists. And I honestly don't remember the difference.
I think the difference was like whether or not you feel like you have to like my example was like growing up playing role-playing video games. It's like, if I'm exploring a dungeon, I'm going to break every vase and, you know, open every chest looking for gold or whatever. And that's like a completionist. And then the completist was something about like, I think it was about like whatever you've done, accepting that your experience was complete because it was the experience you had or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was also like about relationships too. Like,
but for audiences though, like with this, I think there's a thing where you are saying that you need to make all these emails so people get their money's worth. I think where I've come as a consumer of, you know, for work, I subscribe to so many emails or newsletters, etc. That like any money I put towards a given independent media organization is like less about, because I want every single email, and more because I want to support them. And I'm probably not going to open it. I'm probably not even going to open all the free emails, right? But, or maybe I will, because I want to give them the open rate, and maybe I'll click something because I want to give them the click rate because I know about that. But it's more about like wanting, like, I'm just going to consume what I want to consume. And maybe at a certain point I'll stop paying for that thing. I never unsubscribe. I'm really bad about unsubscribing though. Instead, I just like do, you know, mark as unread 50 emails every few hours.
Wow. What a thoughtful consumer you are in the digital era. I mean it.
Yeah.
I think like the bigger thing, Daisy, it sounds like you're talking about is that like at the end of the day, you're concerned about your value and how that's being measured in the world. Because I mean, that's everyone. I mean, I think that's always my biggest thing where I'm like, oh, you know, where I had one person on like one of their exit things in Patreon. They wrote, you know, I'm not supporting American consumers right now because of the tariffs. Like, what the fuck is that even mean? And I was like, okay, like that's cool. But in my head, I'm always like, man, you know, it's funny during this, I'm like in the middle of talking with two other people right now because Patreon raised their rates and other, you know, like everything it just costs more to do stuff.
It was like 12%, 13%. What was it?
I don't know. But it's enough that I looked at like what I'm actually like taking home.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit. I was like, okay, and it's just like my free show just costs too much money on like distribution and stuff, because now in a good and bad way, because it's like a bigger type show, even though not as many people. Like when people like get podcasts, they'll subscribe to, but they may not listen to every single episode, but they're still downloading it, which still is server costs. And I know someone's like, well, just go to some free thing. But like the cost of everything keeps going up. And I'm like, well, fuck, I got to like start raising the prices on this. But what if they run away? What if they don't think I'm worth it anymore? And then you're just like, you know, sometimes you're like, you know what? Yeah. Like I kind of wish I just had a regular 9 to 5, but then you'll go hang out with someone. They'll be like, yo, Kirkland, you have the coolest life, man. It's so cool. You get to do this and this. And I'm like, yeah, well, you have awesome health insurance and a 401k match.
Like, that's like the difference between Francis and I.
That is the difference between us.
We're in a W-2 gap relationship. But yeah, I feel the same way. Like our payroll was free and then it was $120 a month. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's just what that costs now. Like, what am I going to do? Not pay it? It's like when your latte is like randomly $8 and you're like, okay,
yeah,
sure, whatever.
Yeah.
I will never buy a home.
I carry errors and omissions insurance now, which is,
yeah, I have that. I have insurance.
So in case I have someone on and they're like, and it released and they're like, hey, you know, somebody pulled some clip, which is like, yeah, like my show is going to be the show that gets someone canceled. Right. But like somebody pulled some clip and now this person, whatever, and now they want to sue me It's like, well, I have errors and omissions insurance now, which I have to carry. And because I do events, I have like sexual harassment liability things and all these, like, just the cost of doing business to exist. And like, I do events for a couple of these, like, a little bit more old school companies, and they require like proof of me being like, hey, if I got hurt at your thing, I have liability insurance. I have my own health, you know, and I have to prove it because they're, you know, too cheap to like deal with me falling down the stairs or something. Like, I don't know what the hell is going to happen, but it's just like the cost to exist is really high.
And I think sometimes people are like, why do you take yourself so seriously? And it's like, you take yourself seriously too if you woke up every day, had a random $200 expense. Like,
yeah.
For who even knows what. Like, I think the joke about living in New York is like, you walk out the door and $20 flies out of your pocket. But like, if you're a small business owner, it's $200 every day for something.
It sucks.
Yeah. But, it sucks, but like, there is the psychological component of like, was I given the message in childhood that this is how I justify my existence? But at the same time, it's like, but I'm making something. I'm making something that means something to me. And sure, like, I would love to be the type of person who could be satisfied not making something, but for whatever reason, I'm not. And that's okay, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, something I wanted to talk about when we were talking about, you know, feeling exposed on the internet and such. Mm-hmm. You recently had Chris from Venspace on the pod, which is a store I really like. And one thing I really like about them is that they have no e-com. But I was thinking about that as...
Are they in Monocle right now? I swear to God, I just read an article about them.
That would not be surprising.
I'm Googling it.
But yeah, as I'm trying to recover from e-commerce generally, like I'm at the point where like, I have, as I was saying earlier, however much money I've spent on our legacy over the years, like I started like getting into buying clothes when I lived in Portland, Oregon in college. And there's one shop there, Francis May. There was Stephen Allen too, where I could go to try stuff on, but I couldn't afford new stuff. So I would buy stuff on Grailed. And so I'd never had tried it on. So, you know, longtime e-com addict. But since over like the past year or two, I'm like, I live in New York. I make enough money now where like I can go every now and then I can buy something new even. So it's like, if I can, there's no good reason for me to buy something online that probably closer to 50% of the time than further is not really going to fit me right. And then I'm not going to wear it ever. And then I'm either going to never, it's just going to sit there, or I'm going to sell it on Grailed for like 60% of what I bought it. Anyway, rant about my personal shopping habits, but I just think that Venspace's move to not do e-com, and I know he might do it, like maybe he'll bring on just their in-house brand.
Yeah.
I think it's really admirable.
It's interesting because there was a with the Venspace thing, which I agree. I think Chris he's on fire. He knows what he's doing. He also sells, he's a third-party retailer, which is totally fine to do, but I think is probably one of the most difficult things right now. Because if you sell a brand, so say for example, okay, Apprese or Orly, all these brands that are just hot. Well, Orly is sold by a lot of other stores, and Essence put theirs on sale before Joe Schmo's store, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're a person who just likes Orly, you're probably going to buy from wherever it's the cheapest.
It's a commodity.
You're not going to be like,
yeah,
you're not like, oh, well, you know, I really want to support Chris. And you're like, I want to get these pants because I want them and I can save, I don't know, $100. And so Chris is like, look, I'm just not even going to entertain that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not putting words in his mouth at all. Like he's like, this is a small store. It's run by me. I have this stuff. If you want it, here it is. And also that means, you know, when stuff comes in, he'll post stuff on his Instagram, and he even told me, and he shared this on the pod. He's like, look, like once you're a customer, if there's something here that you want, or if there's something, he's like, I'll ship it to you. But you're going to pay his price. And he doesn't like, there's not any sort of like Venspace markup. It's just like, that is the MSRP that's set. Homie's got wild tariffs that he's got to deal with. He's got, you know, all sorts of stuff. And, you know, like, so I think sometimes, like what was it? I think it was an Apprese piece that like it came in. I was like, dude, that's sick. And he's like, yeah, it costs this. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, well, I was like, I don't have the money right now. I was like, you know, I might have it at this time. And I'm not like asking for layaway. I didn't even ask him to hold it. He's like, yeah, dude, it's going to be gone in a few hours. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. But like, that's how it works. And that's his lane. And he's crushing it where it's like, there's not going to be, you know, e-com. There's not, you know, you're not going to put it in your Essence wish list.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have a referral link that he'll kick you back, you know, 4% if you start slinging his stuff for him. And I think people really like it, but people love small brands and things that like they feel like they're supporting, mm-hmm. but only to an extent. Mm-hmm. Once they are more successful than the consumer, then people are like, well, I don't know. You're kind of rich.
Yeah.
You may not need it.
I think,
and that happens to a lot of people now.
Yeah.
One thing about that shop too, though, is like, so you said something about the way you're talking about, like, you know, you're on Essence and like maybe you're not caring about supporting the small shop. Two things, really. One, I think I read this last week, but from this quote from the guy, Bob Geldof, who put together Live Aid. He had an interview with the New York Times last week. And this quote, you saw music as a platform to do things. Could Live Aid happen today? And he says, he's talking about music, but I think this really applies to what we're talking about with clothes. I don't think it's possible now. Society has changed. The web is an isolating technology. It knows what you are. It drives you. It gives you what it thinks you want. And as you get jaded, it gives you more extreme versions of that. Now music is free and you get the news that you want to see. The web is an echo chamber of your own prejudices, so you only hear the music that it thinks you like. It's a silo of the self. So I don't think music can survive being the spine of the culture as it was. So I think, though, that this also really applies to shopping in the way that, like, I haven't been in there for a while, but I went in, I spent like an hour, I was trying on a bunch of stuff. Axel there, shout out to Axel. We were chatting. The next time I came in a few weeks later, he was like, hey, Francis, how's it going? Like, how are the shoes or whatever? And I was just like, wow, like that's amazing. He remembered when I was here for an hour. I don't, you know, it'd been weeks. I'm not sure how many people he's talked to since, but like that is incredible hospitality for me to come in and he remembers me. And that is this, like, this sense of social responsibility that, like, the idea of like, oh, I want this, and, you know, like, look, I'm no saint. I've certainly bought my whatever on sale from Essence plenty of times.
Sure.
But I think this, like, sense of social responsibility of like maybe buying less, but buying it from this place that you want to support. I mean, when I was like in college too, I remember when I was talking about being in Portland, the store Francis May, I went in there once because there was this pair of shoes I wanted that was ungrailed. I couldn't afford them new, but I went into Francis May and I tried them on.
You showroomed them.
Yeah, the shopkeeper too. I forget what I think I said. I was like, oh, I can't afford to buy these. I'm buying these on like used online.
You told them?
Just so bold. What an asshole.
Wow.
Yeah. No. I'm not that much of a little shit anymore.
Not that
at
much.
At least not in that way.
No.
Well, but I think the funny thing is like what you're talking about that you're the most impressed and excited by is like basic customer service from, you know, 1950. Like, I went into a place and they remembered my name. And it's like, yeah, every time you log on to the website, it remembers your name. It remembers everything you bought and does that. But what you're interested in is, I think what everyone is like, oh, it's a human. It's another person that has a soul that whether they care about me or not, I believe it. You know, like they know that I exist. They're acknowledging me. And like, that's the bigger thing where it's like, oh, wow, what we really want is just people to care that we are alive and that we're existing. You know, I mean, I've like, if you zoom further and further back, I mean, that's the thing that's the most exciting is like you were acknowledged in this like big wide world of anonymity and people just giving you things that they think you want. And, you know, I mean, I love hearing like going into a store and having a conversation with a person and actually hearing about what they like or, you know, even if their style's totally different than mine. Or if they like some other brand where it's like, fine, you really like the Row. That's your deal. Great. Good for you. But they have all these reasons behind it. And there's all these other things. And I'm like, okay, like I'm into that. And you're just not going to get that online. You're not going to get that from an AI bot. You're not going to get that from, you know, somebody's fit pics or fit videos because it's a one-sided conversation. They don't acknowledge your physical existence in this world.
Talk about a one-sided conversation too. It's like literally a one-sided photo of like a 2D photo. Clothing is not like this 2D thing. Your body is not this 2D thing, you know?
It's crazy. And it's like, that's the thing now. It's like, oh man, like the stuff that people are the most excited and interested by is like what your grandparents dealt with when they went to JCPenney or Sears. Mm-hmm. Like if Sears came out right now and they were like, yo, check this out. We're going to only do catalogs. We're not going to have a website. And if you want, you got to call on the phone. People would be like, what the fuck? That's so cool. They'd be like, that's so awesome, man. I love it. Like, get this. You just have to call them.
It's like,
you
know? A speakeasy. That's why, like,
yeah. Yeah, it is. They're like, yo. And sometimes I called and like it was busy. I couldn't even get in. They're like, oh, yeah, the new thing came out.
There was this article. Like, I forget the name of the restaurant. It's like some restaurant in Tribeca, I think. I remember reading this in the New York Times a year or two ago where like they don't do Resi or anything. It's like it's this husband wife team and she runs the front of the house and like you call and like she writes your name down in the reservation book.
Yeah.
And now I just can't get that meme out of my head. That's like this diner still does Coke the old fashioned way 97 years later or something. But
yeah. It's crazy. But like, yeah, that's, you know, I think that's a thing. But also, you know, like the ease of at which something is accessible is a luxury.
Yeah.
And so like now, you know, it's why people love like Drops and like Supreme and all these things. Like nobody needed a fucking Supreme locker all of a sudden. But the fact that it's hard to get. And
well, it's friction. We talk about this a lot on the podcast. It's like how friction is this like social good that people love because like life, like, I mean, to zoom out, life is friction, right? It's like it's just friction until you're born and then you die. And everything in between is like various forms of friction or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm. And, it's like the earth room.
It's now crazy. You're taking us back to episode one, Daisy.
Well, it's like this whole perspective that difficulty is what makes us prize things. And so if you have a room full of dirt in Soho, the more expensive the real estate around it becomes, the more precious it is in a sense, because the more friction it's creating with the capital incentives of that property. And like relationships are the same way, right? Mm-hmm. Would you want to have a frictionless relationship? You wouldn't want to have a relationship that's all friction.
It's balance. You need balance.
Yeah, I need balance. Yeah, you don't want all friction, but it is nice to not, you know, get into an argument over cereal.
No, and actually my husband and I have a bit that they should let you do polymarket bets on couples like low stakes disagreements.
Oh.
Oh.
Like, hey, did we actually go to that restaurant in 2023?
Oh my God. Okay. Another thing I want to ask about, being a, you know, a style guy and living in not New York anymore. How has that changed things for you? Do you like relish visiting New York and dressing up and, you know, packing? Like, what is your relationship to dressing and going outside? I mean, been there for 5 years now, you said. How's that changed?
I'm so much happier. Like I don't have the stress and the agony of wondering what someone thought about me. And I think some of that I attribute to age of just like, you know, I'll be 40 next month and I'm like, okay, like maybe I don't need to impress this random person on the C train. You know, like I don't even know why I wanted
that. C-train, never. Never need to impress anyone on the C-train.
I've gotten lazy. And I think that's the bigger thing where it's like, there's no runway here. You know what I mean? So a lot of times I catch myself in wearing my gym clothes all day because my usual routine is I get up, get the kids ready, get them to wherever they got to be. And then I go to the gym, try to do something. You know, which is also pick up my phone between every set like an idiot. And then, you know, I have a phone call or meeting or recording or whatever it is that I got to do. And then I'm like, oh, I actually, not only did I not even shower, like I didn't even really put anything cool on. And I'm like, I've just been wearing Patagonia baggies for like 5 or 6 days straight. I'm like that. I can't do that. Like, that's not acceptable.
Well, think about the airflow.
And it's like, if you're going to also be really into clothes and fashion and all these other things, you gotta kind of actually be wearing this stuff, right? Like, so force yourself to get dressed.
Well, what about, but even you know, Jonathan Anderson, you know, he goes out on the runway after presenting his new Dior show and he's just wearing like Levi's and like a Uniqlo shirt.
But that's Anderson still cool.
It is
that's not cool. Gym clothes.
That's true.
You know, and also other times I'll go and I'll pick up my kid and I'll be like, hey, I got a good fit on. You know, I'm walking to the pickup line. And I've said this before, I've had people be like,
that's the runway.
The runway is the pickup line, and it is fucking hot. It gets spicy. Oh,
what are the
God.
What are the other people
yeah,
wearing?
Talk
what's
us
what,
through this.
The yeah the looks of St. Louis.
There's so St. Louis is weirdly like a super super old money place in specific areas, like where Carly Kloss grew up in Ladue is like very fucking old money. You know where Derek Blasberg and all those like other rich St. Louisans are at. Like John Hamm taught at, I think it was John Burroughs, which is like one of the nicest prep high schools.
John Hamm was a teacher?
John Hamm. Oh, yeah. He's from St. Louis.
I had no idea.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot. Yeah. And then you have like Ellie Kemper, whose family run this thing called Commerce Bank. So there's a lot of like old money there. And then you also have this like St. Louis is unfortunately one of the like case studies of like the history of white flight, where you just had all these neighborhoods, you know, grow because they were scared of African Americans and crime. And like, it's beyond fucked up. It's not something to debate. It's just true. It's what happened here. And so you have these like little pockets and these little neighborhoods, but then you had all these Bosnians and Herzegovians and the Serbia crisis and all that stuff that happened in the 90s. Clinton brought all these refugees over. Now you have like, you know, more populations of South Asian. So you have, it's like, you have black and brown and white and all these different people, and they're all kind of stuck together in where everyone wants to live is like West County in the suburbs. And so you have people showing up the pickup line in G-Wagons and Lululemon and then F-150s and Under Armour. And then you have like way too many Teslas and everyone wearing golf clothes. And so it's like, they're all very specific lanes of individuals. And then I show up and I'm like, you know, wearing some like old vintage thing.
What are you pushing? What's the car?
I have a Kia Telluride. It's fine. Nice. It works. It's got CarPlay and a blind spot monitor. And I think I'm a badass in it, but it's very much like the kids are in the back and there's Cheetos on the floor. Whatever. Mm-hmm. I'll, you know, wear something and then people will, I'll be talking to someone at the playground and, you know, they'll ask me about like, and so you're white or partner, you know, like, oh, you maybe you're probably gay based on what you're wearing. And it's like a fucking, you know, I'm wearing like an MA1 jacket here or something. Like, come on, man. It's
show up in an Adidas tracksuit a couple times and I'll put that.
Yeah.
To rest.
But yeah, there's some tolerance there and acceptance where, you know, nobody cared, but they were like trying to be respective, even though they got it wrong. So yeah, it's kind of a great place, but I'll force myself to wear something and feel good. And I think it's made my style like much more focused because also having to travel all the time, I'm like, you know, I've just packed the same things. It's like,
did you see the tweet that was like, if you're not using packing cubes in 2025, like something, I was like, packing cubes? Like, are you okay?
Packing cubes are like the biggest farce the travel world ever pulled on the entire.
Unwell. Yeah. I've never.
Nobody
in my
needs
life,
a packing cube.
No, like, what are you bringing? I don't know about you, Jeremy. Like, I will not check a bag unless I'm like good and truly going to be gone for more than 2 weeks. Like, I feel like, I don't know if it's epigenetic. I feel like I should have my carry on and I need to be ready to flee at any given time.
Yep.
And like, if you are packing a big bag, like you are going to be left behind by the tribe in a situation. I don't know what to tell you. And when they make me check my carry-on because the overhead bin is full, that is like stressful.
So rude.
It's crazy. I hate when that happens. And I'm like, no. Like this is perfect, you know, IATA, whatever code. It fucking fits in the luggage, bro.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, I don't know. It looks like you gotta check it. And you're just like, no, I will. And that's the thing. The airline will get me anytime. At one time, they're like, well, I don't know. Like, if you want to pay to make sure that you can board first, that way you don't have to check it. And I was like, wait, I just paid $125 to board
more.
First instead of, yeah, just to store my carry on instead of checking it for free, but then having to wait.
The big indignity of checking it, this is my least favorite thing, is when you're at the baggage claim and people just gather at the mouth as if they are some bears at the mouth of the river waiting for the salmon. They just gather right at the front of it, right up against the belt. You're supposed to, you can stand near the mouth, but you got to stand like 5 to 10 feet back, look, wait for your thing to come by, then you approach.
Like, oh, there's my fuck-ass suitcase. But, I also, like Francis knows this, like I have a big thing about waiting in lines. I think this is a, I joke, this is another epigenetic thing. Like when I'm in a line, I'm like sitting target, time to flee. Like something in my genetic DNA is like, do not get on that line.
What's your time limit for, like, you see the line, you're like, not worth it.
If it's a moving line to get into something that I have purchased a ticket for, or a line to get into a restaurant that I have a reservation for, sure. Or like to check out somewhere.
But the Supreme store.
A line to get into a party that I don't have guaranteed entry into, number one indignity. One time, this was like early on, and I love the Drift, but they always kind of create a line at their party. They were doing a launch party for their new issue. I rock up. There's a line and we wait for a couple minutes and I was like, no, we got to go. And I try to do like a Jerry Maguire thing. Like, who's coming with me? We're going to the tiki bar around the corner. Like one person comes with me, right? Later, the article is in the New York Times and it describes the line as like these like desperate wannabes trying to get into the party. And I messaged the only person that had come with me to the bar. And I was like, that would have been us, but it's not because we weren't in that line.
I hate lines too. I will, but in my head I was like, I'm too old for this, and it's like, I'm not fucking too old. I just say I'm too old because I also like am terrified of the rejection. I went to when I was at PT Womo, we went to the Issey Miyake show, and it was me and Gian and I are we're like, oh, like I had just taken the train from Puglia up. So I get to Florence and he's like, hey, the Issey show, like there's shuttles that leave at like 7:30.
Oh God.
And I was like, oh, shuttles, like that's lame. I was like, oh, look, it's way up in some Medici mansion. I was like, yeah, sure, fine. I was like, well, I was like, I'm a little bit behind. I got a shower. I was like, we'll just take, and he's like, no big deal. He's like, I'll meet you at your hotel. We'll take a car up. Sure. So we put in the address. We get in the Uber. Italian dude is like, yeah, I got you. Drives us to the address, air quote, which I thought was the address. And he's like, it's up there. And he points to up the road. And Gian and I are like, oh, okay, well, the show starts in like 30 minutes, but it's a presentation. It'll be not that big of a deal. Like, it's fine. We walk up the road and I was like, this is kind of a steep hill. And he's like, yeah, I'm really tired. It's like 98 degrees. It's hot as hell. He's like, dude, this is a steep hill. I was like, yeah. I was like, well, oh, I see some people down there. It's good. We got this. You know, and I'm like dancing, like just trying to like change the mood because I can't stand anyone being unhappy.
Right.
And so I was like, okay. I was like, oh, dude, look, we got it. We got it. We get up there and it's not the place. You got to make a left up another hill. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, it's fine. Go up the other hill. You know, add another 5 minutes up there. I'm like, it's getting dark. Like, what? We've been walking for a while. And I was like, oh, look, I see some people in a suit. This is it. And Gian's like, oh.
Dark.
He's like, this is crazy. He's like, you know, this is nuts. I can't believe this. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, don't worry. We're going to be at the Issey show. It's going to be great. You know, this is big show of pity. And we go up. We see the people in suits. And it says photographers. And I'm like, oh. And Gian's like, hey, can we do this? Can we get in? And they're like, no, it's up the hill. And we're like, we just went up the hill. We've already been up two hills. And he's like, can I go through this photographer entrance? And they said, no, it's closed. And now I was like, wait, I think they said the show is closed. Did he say the show is closed? He's like, no. And we go up another hill. Meanwhile, there's cars passing us.
Going down.
I was like, this is not ideal. The road is now gone from paved to gravel. We're continuing to walk up this hill. We start to hear music. And I was like, this is not good. I'm like, Gian, I think the show started. He's like, oh, no big deal. It'll be fine. It's a presentation. I was like, yeah, you're right. I was like, man, but we've been walking for 20 minutes now from us being out of the cab. I was like, we've walked over a mile because I got some stupid Aura ring that's like, hey, are you on a walk? And I was like, dude, this is not ideal. This is not good. We turn again, and now it feels like we're in a Resident Evil video game because you hear church bells going and there's birds flying over the over your head, but you're enclosed in this fucking forest of gravel road with weird tribal music that's playing with some Issey show that we have no idea what's going on way in the distance. We make our way another hill. This is not an exaggeration. It's 1.4 miles up the goddamn fucking road. And we get up there, we get ready to walk in, and they go, you can't come in. And we're like, what? And then this other like this huge like Instagram person came in with like a gajillion followers, and they're behind us, and they're like, "Wait, you can't get in." And they and I was like, "No." I was like, "They're not letting anyone in." And Gian's like, "Hey, I, you know," and I've never seen Gian lose his cool or flex his job. Mm-hmm. Like he's just not that guy. And the other person, they're like, you know, Mr. Mrs. Instagram influencer million follower is like, goes, "This is the president of Nordstrom." It is not. And they're like, no one's getting in. The show started. He's like, "I can't let you in." And I was like, "This is super awkward. There's a line forming now. We don't know what to fucking do. I feel like an idiot." And so everyone, of course, pulls out their phones and is like, "Well, I'm going to text someone." Like, that's going to fix everything. Nothing is working. We can't get into the show. And you hear the music. It's getting louder now. Then all of a sudden you start to hear clapping. And I was like, "Oh, it's over. We missed it." And Instagram influencer in the background is losing their mind, being, I would say, like, pretty obnoxious. And like, now I'm being like a little bit rude.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Hey," I was like, "we do kind of need to get in. This was a show." Like, the PR people had even sent a thing to my hotel with some special little paintbrush and all these things, and like my invite. And now I'm like, great. Like, I just lost all my credibility because now they know I'm not there. They didn't care. Yeah. And I was like, "Oh no." You know, and so then Gian's like, "Hey, I'm just going to walk in. Like, this area is open." So we walk through this area. It's like a little presentation thing. There were some other Japanese people, and they see us, and you could tell they look at each other like, "Do we acknowledge? Do we say something to these people?" We just barrel straight on through. The clapping is going on. Then we go to this other door, and it's like everything is behind this door. Big old security guard, looks like a Mission Impossible villain, comes out and is like, "Excuse me?" You know, and you're like, "Oh man, what are we doing?" And he's like, "I got to get into the show." Instagram influencer is going nuts, pull out their phone. And now he's like documenting his horrendous customer service experience. Like, he's going to get someone canceled. And
unsubscribe.
Then this Japanese. Yeah, I know. It's insane. Then this Japanese person comes out and they're like, "Oh, hey, Gian, like, what's going on?" He's like, "Yeah, I was trying to get in the show. The people didn't let me." They're like, "No, you should have come in." It's like, well, it doesn't matter because they're still clapping outside. Doors open. Boom. This beautiful scenic view of the top of the hill at the Medici Mansion. I mean, it's stunning. It's incredible. There's mist everywhere. You see all these colorful Isamiyaki things flying around, but everyone is leaving and we missed the fucking show all because didn't really want to deal with the line. So
the lesson is line's good.
Okay, well, you might have changed my mind about some things. This has been Tasteland.
This is Tasteland.
Yeah, there you go.
See you next week.
Ciao. Thank you for coming on.